my version of that is life is short. I want every minute to be valuable. I have wasted so much of my time.
I'm Lyle Troxell. I've been doing radio for almost 2 decades, and you and I have chatted a few times on my podcast, and we decided to do the important thing with just you and me. And so I'm just going to be talking to you about the important thing. So, Michael, what's the important thing this week?
Information, consumption practices or habits or rituals. So I feel like we could probably do about 3 days on this.
All right. Well, you're just talking about reading.
Footnote one.
So you have piles of books.
Yes.
When you said you had it on one pile versus another pile, is that like nightstand versus in the office?
There's a protocol. There's next to the bed, and that bed, that one is being read right now. I try to max that out at 3 because if I don't, it just sort of grows and grows and grows over time.
But you can't read 3 books at once.
Yeah, but it's currently being read, up next, just in case currently being read is awful, and then up next after that. So it's 3. But let's just be clear. It's been like 22 before, and that's just...
Okay,
that's
so
just,
three's a benefit.
three is very manageable. That's pile number one. Pile number two is upstairs, which is candidates for the pile of 3. And then there's everything else, which is just a huge pile of books sitting somewhere that... At some point every year or so, I kind of go through the candidates pile and the huge pile and kind of go through those. And of course, anytime anything new comes in, it gets considered for first pile or the candidate pile.
All right, let's start with first pile, though. What do you got right now in the first pile?
I have Consider the Lobster, which is my introduction to David Foster Wallace, which is lovely, and it's full of educations about all sorts of things, including footnotes. I have that. I have a book on the Panama Canal, the history of the Panama Canal, which is just endlessly fascinating. I like history about engineering projects because it teaches me about being an engineer now. And I read this great book on the building of the Brooklyn Bridge, which happened, I believe, 7 or 8 years after the Civil War. Exactly. Whenever I tell that to people, they're like, what? You know, like, we just figured out how to not, like, shoot each other. And they were building the Brooklyn Bridge, which the engineering feat that I always point out there is, which I would have never known if I hadn't read the book, was how do you dig a hole in the bottom of a river? This is really like...
That's hard.
It's really hard, especially when you don't have things like, oh, I don't know, electricity and steel. Short answer is it's called a caisson.
You sink a boat, basically.
You sink a boat upside down with air in it, and then you figure out and you push it down, and then you dig in this dark, cold, dark thing with nothing but these phosphorus, I forget what it is, but this chemical lights to like light it down there. Oh, and by the way, they didn't know about bends either. So they got and deeper and people were starting to get sick and they're like, what's going on here? Anyway, but
you haven't finished that book.
No, this was the Panama Canal, which was inspired by the Brooklyn Bridge book.
You.
So anyway, I'm about halfway through that, and it's hard reading because it's long. So I'm on the David Foster Wallace, which is a little bit more approachable. And the third book is a comic book.
Does that count?
Yes, it involves reading.
Comic book is it?
It's the Doomsday Clock, the new kind of reimagining of the Watchmen in the DC universe.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, it's kind of not great, but I'm giving it a try.
Well, Watchmen's kind of, if you haven't read a comic, go get Watchmen.
Watchmen and the Dark Knight. Like, if you've never done a graphic novel, those are the two that, like, if you're going to care about this, this is the place to start.
And if you want to get anybody else addicted to comic books, have them read both of those.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I have given away dozens and dozens of copies. I'm like, here, I'm going to change your life. Go read this now. You're welcome.
And of course, if you don't believe us, go read Understanding Comics.
Ooh,
and then you'll be
phenomenal.
Like, oh, comics are good.
Yes, yeah, yes. But the reimagined one is, it's coming out exactly like, I don't know if you're familiar with the first Watchmen, but it took forever to get it done. This one is taking forever. It's like 3 or 4 months between issues. So they're on like 7 or 8 of 12. I don't know, but it's okay.
I was blessed with not being into comics really a little bit as a kid, but not really seriously into comics. And then someone handed me the graphic novel Complete Watchmen and Dark Knight within like the same month.
Yeah.
And I was hooked.
That was
that's a real blessing.
That was the golden age. You're welcome.
Those are your books. And it sounds like you've got them all over the house and you consume books a lot, but what's your pattern for actually reading those books? Are you reading every night? Are you reading in the morning? What are you doing?
It's not that much reading, actually, which makes me sad, which is why the books pile up, because I think it's a reading guilt. It's mostly right before I go to sleep. So most of my information is not coming from the books. Right now, it's 5 to 30 minutes before I go to sleep, and it's more towards 5 because the days are long.
And you're tired.
And I'm tired. And I love reading before I go to sleep. It sort of tells my brain.
Are you a screen avoider at night?
A little bit. I just struck a treaty with my wife about no devices there because to the point of reading guilt, I was a Reddit guy on my iPad. And Reddit, the front page of Reddit, it's just designed because it's got a bajillion people like upvoting the right stuff. And they do a pretty good job of curating that or whatever the heck's going on there. But I can look at that for an hour every night. And it's kind of like Twitter. It little small things that tickle your fancy.
And does that mean that you decided to change that pattern?
That pattern recently changed back to books because I sleep fine. I don't think the blue light is doing anything to me, but it's more just about honoring that time of night of like getting out of the workday into the sleep and sort of the quiet. And the screen, it doesn't feel, it's like we decided long before we got married, no TVs in the room. And it feels like there's a TV there when I've got an iPad. Not that I'm watching any videos, but sometimes I am. And that seems like not what I want to occur in that room.
And of course, if you're reading Reddit, it might shift into work pretty quickly, right? There might be an interesting post that totally is applicable to work, and all of a sudden you've got that brand.
Yeah, it's about that night is winding down to this hopefully somewhat quiet, what quiet night of sleep after what is usually a busy day.
Do you think of that pattern that you guys have made as some kind of forming of a ritual?
Yeah, it is. It is absolutely a ritual. This seems off topic, but what the heck? We go to bed at the same time. It's about sort of that sort of like the relationship is about a constant investment. So in busy days, doing totally different things, having that moment of the day when we're just sort of chilling and sort of doing the same thing and going to bed at the same time just seems like a good, healthy investment in a marriage.
Yeah, that sounds good.
Yeah.
Okay. We won't get into ritual, but I think we have to table that at some point.
I like rituals. Ritual. I've been using the word ritual recently a lot. It's better than process. People, the engineers, you say process, so they go, grrr. You say ritual, and they're like, tell me more.
Yes. All right.
What's the ritual here?
Okay. That's reading and not Reddit. Are you therefore not consuming Reddit as much, or are you doing a different time of day?
I'm not doing it right now. Well, ask me again in a couple months on that one.
See if you fell back into it.
Yeah. Because it is like, it's great. I mean, they do it. The front page of Reddit is interesting things. And the news front page is actually super interesting, a diverse set of perspectives there. So there's value there, but it's not normally part of my information consumption over the course of the day.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Let's talk about television.
Currently not a lot of TV, primarily because of time. When something is crossed the sort of nerd threshold of like being totally amazing and however we all figured this out, I end up watching it, but I'm still playing catch up on some amazing television. Like my daughter and I are watching Parks and Rec, and Parks and Rec is phenomenal. And
really
I'm on season 4 and I'm in love with the characters. I laugh every single episode. They care about each other.
And it's something you can do with your daughter.
And you can do it with your daughter, and she likes to watch it with dad, and it's just so good. So, like, The Office is right behind that. So I am
My family's currently in The Office US version, and I'm loving it with them. I mean, it's just a blast.
It's fun, and I learned the trick. The trick is to skip the first season for both, because they're all like, what's this about? Who are these people? And they're right. Second season was just, I was trying to start the first season. I'm like, The Office first season is painful, because he's just a jerk, right?
Yeah.
The main character, Steve Carell. So, but you start the second season, it's better. So not a lot of TV, more movies than TV. We're a movie family. We love going out to the movies.
So it's a family outing kind of thing.
Yeah, family outing.
Do you guys do dinner too when you do that?
No, the ritual is sometimes dinner, but the ritual is, and this just my family before I was married, so my parents and my sister had the ritual of talking about the movie after the movie. That's almost as much fun as watching the movie, especially in this current MCU universe where there's so many intertwined, all this heroes and heroines and blah, blah, blah. What's the Infinity Gauntlet? How many stones are there? So the moment that we all get in the car, we're like, okay, what's the grade? And everyone's like, it's a B plus, blah, blah, blah. And then there's sort of like the walking through the movie and talking through all of the dependencies and all the interesting things that happen and da, 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 da.
And does your whole family participate on that?
Everybody who's in the car will participate. And it's something that my wife had to learn about because I love to do it. But it's that processing of what we just went through and talking about it and sort of, why is this important? What happened there? And Iron
Man. Have you ever found yourself in a situation where you weren't able to do that right afterwards? And did it eat at you?
when you say it, the idea of it does. But I think even if there was no one, I don't generally go to movies by myself. So there's always someone there. And there's always, here's the more interesting version of that question, which is what happens when that doesn't happen at all?
Yeah.
It was a bad movie.
Right? It was nothing to say.
Yeah, the sure. thing in my family used to say is like, how long on the drive home? Because you and I both live sort of in the mountains.
Yeah.
Like, so it's a drive to get home, right? So how long of the drive home do you talk about the movie? And the answer is somewhere from nothing to like the entire way. And very often, like if you're on the way home and it's like 2 minutes after and you're talking about, hey, what do you want to do this week? And you're like, oh, bad movie.
Yeah, yeah. When you talk about the Marvel Universe with your family and such, are you bringing in your knowledge of the canon, if you will?
Yeah, but I'm losing now because my kids are so much smarter than I am. They're like, my daughter especially is just so has it all in her head and just she grooves on it because she's obviously genetically related to me. But she's like, she loves that sort of analyzing and kind of obsessing about all of it. So now I'm like, oh, yeah, the purple stone, that's the reality stone. And she's like, dad. And I'm like, oh, because I used to be like the keeper of the lore. So she's stronger at that. Me
part of parenting, right, is letting them transition.
Oh, yeah,
letting them take over.
Yeah. I gave her like, Dark Knight and Watchmen and these sorts of things, or Ender's Game, or all these sort of seminal sort of science fiction comic things. And it's like, it's this joy as you're handing them to your son or daughter. And they're like, you're like, oh, well, you get to read this for the first time. And I'm just like super excited. And sometimes they like don't get it at all. And you're like, oh, drag. I gave my son was it Ready Player One, which I read in one sitting, by the way, like beginning to end. And he's like, don't really get it. I was
Of course,
my God. Like,
that's
okay.
One that's designed for our age, right?
Yeah.
I mean, it's so many references.
I think he can tell that it's so many references there. But I was literally delighted that entire read. I was just like, oh my gosh. But like something like The Martian, which isn't necessarily generational, but it's such a good, good, he just loved that.
I haven't read The Martian.
The Martian is phenomenal.
Ready Player One, I haven't seen the film still. I've just decided that I didn't want to do it. And I probably will at some point, but I kind of also said, well, read the book again before you see the film because it'd be more fun to do that anyway. I interviewed Ernie when he released the book and it was a fun chat with him. But what was fun about that book for me was just reading it and then not being able to talk about it for a while was just this kind of aggravation. And then it exploded to people and my son consumed it and loved it. And now we geek out
about
it.
How old is he?
He is 17 now.
Interesting.
So
mine just not grab him.
You know, my son, for some reason, he's a drummer and for some reason he got into 80s music. And so he is listening to 80s music and playing along with it. And I think it might have been the first concert I brought him was something in that era.
Right, right.
But anyway, he got hooked into it. And so I think that helps.
Yeah.
Definitely.
I thought there was enough 80s stuff going on that the kids would like it, but they were not into it. The movie I thought was really good. I've watched it a couple of times. It's what you would expect out of sort of a Steven Spielberg spectacle.
Yeah.
But it was, I watched it a couple of times. It wasn't like an A, it wasn't like amazing, but it was good.
I was impressed with Ender's Game movie too.
Yeah.
You know, it wasn't the book, but it was good. It was enjoyable.
It was fine.
Yeah.
Yeah, agreed.
So that's film and movies and reading a bit. Mm-hmm. What other consumption are you doing?
The primary information consumption I do is still RSS feeds. That's still my means of sampling in a way that kind of gives me the fastest, broadest set of information about things I care about. I use Feedly, which is great. I think they rose from the occasion at the after the Google Reader died. Mm-hmm. And it's great. It's fast. I pay for it gleefully because I want it to exist. And I probably have, I'm guessing, we can put this in the show notes, probably, I don't know, 50 or 60 feeds that I'm doing. And
do you curate? Do you pull them and add them?
Yeah, I do. So yeah, I have a set that I go through. But something about my information consumption that protocol that's probably going to drive a lot of people a little bit be frustrated with me is I have absolutely, and this is a learned behavior ritual, if you will, I have no compunction about saying select all, mark as read.
And you hear that?
Whenever I say that to someone in Slack, I call it the lop salute. It's called shift escape, and it marks everything as red. And when I do this demo for like companies and execs and whatnot. They're like, oh, I'm like, it's all still there. You just search for it. It's cool. Don't worry about it. Calm down. But it's there's a sanity enhancer there for me, which is just like, hey, if it's important. And this set of feeds that I have, and feeds are all like just me consuming. It's not like things that are going to change my life. But if there is something that's going to change my life, it's going to show up in some other way. So I'd like to read it all, but when I start to feel a little bit behind, it's just like, I think it's mark all as read, and I'm just fine with that.
Do you have a metaphor for this?
No, it's not a metaphor as much as just a practice, which mm-hmm. is, I think that we've been spending a lot of time in the last 20 years building really amazing tools to get us information as quickly as possible.
Yes.
And you sit there nodding like I nod about this, like this is a great thing. But we haven't always necessarily done that in a way that's friendly to humans, I think. And that's not a critique of anybody. I don't think anyone has actual malice about the service or the web app or the application that they've built. They're trying to build something either for them or that they think is going to be broadly useful. But in all of that, and all of that hurry to bring us the most interesting, hottest, freshest information, we've sometimes forgotten things about humans that I think are important. That we do have, a lot of us have this completionist instinct of wanting to read all the things or to know everything or FOMO or whatever it is. And so the practice I've developed over time is just like, hey, life is short. And this is why I really like being out of email, because I'm mostly out of email because I work at Slack, is just I don't worry about that as much. And I am happy to like mark it all as read. And there could be some lossiness there. I might lose something, but we have a lot of practices at Slack about making sure that things land on my plate. And it's are more modern.
So don't you just have a bit of privilege there in the sense that you have staff support and lots of people reporting to you? So when things bubble up, you have really smart people telling you about it?
I don't think so. We have a culture about, we all know that there's a lot of people and there's a lot of information. So if someone wants me to, and I'm in a lot of channels, many of which I do not read, but if someone wants me or anyone to know, like, this is important to you, Lyle or Lop or whoever, you do at Lyle or at Lop, and I'll see it. So it's not privilege as much as just a kind of cultural norms that we've defined to kind of make it sure that things
bubble
up. Someone's
going to pin stuff for you that's really important, but everything else is available to you.
Absolutely.
I'm on call this week, right? So for the group I'm at Netflix, and that means that if we have some issues that look like they're part of my team's problems, I'll get a pager duty event. And the first line of stuff coming into us is a support email thread. I don't have the benefit of not having an email. and that thing piles up all the time. And this morning when I came online for support, I went ahead and just marked all those as read. Well, first I took a look at the last few hours to make sure there wasn't anything. Then I marked everything as read because now I know that folder represents the work I'm responsible for this week.
Right.
And the only reason I felt comfortable doing this, even though I hadn't read them, is because I knew that the most important thing was for me to catch the new stuff.
Right.
And all the other stuff is definitely not important right now.
Yep.
Comparatively.
Yeah.
And so the question is, how can you make that decision about all the stuff that's coming in? And the metaphor I think I was looking for earlier when I asked you this was that it, and maybe it's just because I was at the beach the other day, is that, you know, if you're out on looking for a wave and a wave passes you, you have to look for the next one now.
Right.
Like you don't want to just go, you don't want to chase it.
Yeah.
And so at some level, the deluge of things that are happening all the time, that continual pattern, there's no way you can catch up with everything if you let some of them pass.
Absolutely.
And so now it's about what's the most effective way to move forward.
Yeah.
I think the completion thing, and I like that you started with, this is a learned behavior.
Yeah.
I think it is something you have to tell yourself and teach yourself and give yourself permission to do.
And also to trust, like if I really had a lot of email, I think there'd be, I've spent years of my life modifying mail rules to make sure that I have a high probability of seeing things that I'm supposed to, which that's mostly gone now because, again, a modern tool like Slack, not that this is an advertisement for Slack, but it has been considered with all the other things that we have screwed up over the last 20 years is the story that I tell myself. But it's there's just the fact that that completionist thing, you're never going to get caught up with it. So I'm just sampling. I call it tasting the soup. I'm really good at tasting the soup. This sounds interesting. Oh, give me three more of these. Oh, that sounds a little, that's weird. Let me dig into that. So I've got, there's your metaphor, tasting the soup. I'm really good at that.
Lots of soups.
Lots of soup. That's what I do in my meetings when I'm, you know, when I'm in a one-on-one, I'm just like soup tasting. I'm like, what's going on today? Oh, a little salty today.
I have found the some of the conversations that have happened for email lately to make it more effective is that when people are mentioned in the email, people highlight their names in yellow.
Yeah.
It's something that happens regularly.
Yeah.
This idea that, you know, we know you're going to look at it for a few seconds. So if you're in there, you should know that you're in there.
Yeah, we did that at a prior gig as well.
Mm-hmm. Okay, back to RSS. You use the app, so therefore it's synced between all your devices and such. So it's everywhere you want it to be. When you mark it as all red, all the devices have been marked as all red.
Which is a requirement for any tool that we're about to talk about.
Everything has to be synced across
devices.
Everything
is universal sync. There's never, that would drive me crazy to have to do it twice.
Let's say you're reading something and you go, oh, this I want to continue reading, but I don't have the time right now. What do you do?
It's a great question, and my answer is going to sound really smart, and then I'm going to tell you that I don't really ever do this. Both like in Reddit or in RSS, in Feedly, if it's like, oh, this is too long, I can't read it right now, I will use whatever the mechanism is to flag it for later. In the history of ever, I never go back. So, you know, these articles have a one-time chance with me to get in the 50 to 100 words. And if I don't get it there, I move on. Like, and you'd probably be super annoyed watching me read because it's J is the next article. J. Oh, here's an interesting one. 10 seconds, J. So it's this really rapid-fire consumption method for inside of Feedly.
And you're doing the Feedly stuff not at night in bed when you've already gone to sleep or gone to bed. But it's when?
It's in the morning, and it'll probably, again, a complete pass in the morning and a complete pass in the evening. And maybe like 10 minutes in the middle of the day, kind of like as a filler, sort of like I used to do with Reddit at night.
Okay, so that 10 minutes during the day during a filler, you're like, between meetings or something's happened where you've got a little bit of time, you open up Feedly, you have, you know, 500 articles, you start J, then it's like time to do something else, clear all right then? Or what do you do?
Probably not. I will make that big clear all distinction at night. And the number is 1,000. If I'm looking at the number of unread articles and it's 1,000, I'm like, okay, I'm over the limit and I will clear all. If it's anywhere from 2 to 600, I will give it a shot.
But you won't get through that.
No, I mean, if it's 200 or 300, I can get through that pretty quickly. But yeah, that 600 is basically 1,000.
Okay. So this JJJJ is on a laptop. What about iPad and iPhone? Swipe, swipe, swipe?
Generally not doing that consumption on the iPad or the iPhone.
Why?
Because it's almost always because I'm sitting down there. I'm sitting at a laptop when I have this time. So if it's on a plane, planes too. Planes have Wi-Fi now. So it's almost always a desktop.
So you do RSS consumption on your laptop, but you require it to be synced everywhere.
I do.
So you could open it in your iPad, no problem.
I could do it just fine, but I don't generally do that. That use case is, that's not my use case. And I don't know why now that I'm thinking about it.
What phone are you using right now?
I have the iPhone monolith, the ginormous thing.
The giant, the Max?
Oh my gosh, it's the Max. That's right. Yeah, the monolith too. Is what I call it because look at that.
It's massive.
Exactly. Find this on the moon and be like, what the hell? It's aliens.
But you're not doing, you do feel like because now you have a larger screen, I'm assuming you ran the X before. You have a larger screen. You're not doing more reading there.
Nope. It's a phone for me is lightweight triage. Very little. I won't read on my phone. It's if JJJ on the desktop is fast, the phone is the five times faster than that. It's just quickly glance and see what's going on.
Okay.
It's
your calendar, basically.
It's my calendar. It's that notification. It's that, important thing. I need to jump into Slack.
Somebody did at me. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So I will generally not respond because I like to type fast, and typing on the phone while okay, it's just it feels like I'm like passing it through like a little tiny
hose. So you haven't mentioned YouTube.
Interesting you mentioned that. I'm kind of getting on the YouTube train from a like quality. I kind of viewed it as the means by which I consume trailers and sort of like funny videos. But really in the last 6 months or so, there's just a vast amount of, obviously this is the important thing. I'll be the boring thing on the important thing. There's just a ton there. Like, for example, I'm really interested in this movie coming out about Queen, Bohemian Rhapsody. So I'm just fascinated by any articles or any videos about that. So it's not my default state, but in the last 6 months, it's gone from sort of occasional to like one of those first things I'll pick during downtime.
And is that on the phone, on the iPad, on the laptop?
It's mostly the desktop again.
You are a desktop person, it sounds like.
I like a little bit of real estate, even with the iPhone monolith here.
I find myself doing a lot of YouTube videos, almost always watching people engage in the creation process and teaching how to do that. So all the blacksmithing skills stuff I picked up recently is about kind of learning from other people.
I have learned that in the last couple of years whenever I have a question, like I had this problem with my spa, the ozonator wasn't doing the thing, and I was like, I used to kind of make fun of YouTube because I can read and like just give me the bulleted list, but there's massive value in seeing the person like take off the side of the spa and he's like, this is the hose you're looking for. And if I read that, I'd be like, there's 17 hoses here.
You've got to find a manual for your spa specifically. Yeah. And that's going to be a PDF. And
yeah. So yeah, there's a lot there.
I am really surprised you didn't go to your father for spa stuff. I find that I actually don't mind a YouTube video that's too long and just jump around until I find the part where they're pointing at the hoses. Okay, now I'm listening.
And you also learn the YouTube intro jump. It's always like, get past the part where they say, please click. I'm like, okay, it's
don't
like
do
70
intros.
Seconds.
Man, intros, no intros. I think the reason why I'm a full-time engineer was because I engaged in so much consumption of talks and discussions around JavaScript years ago.
Right.
It got me excited again about it. So I definitely feel like I'm a video motivates me to do things.
It's more answers questions for me. It's how to motivate me. When I think about things that motivate me, like writing always motivates me. Like really good writing is the thing that I will be like, wow, that's just that I'm going to read that paragraph one more. I'm going to read it again. Like, that's amazing what you did with that semicolon. That's the thing to me that is inspirational is when someone expresses themselves in words that you're like, wow, I have those same words and all that grammar. I don't think I could do that. That's amazing.
All right. What have I missed in asking about consumption? What else do you consume?
Notifications are probably a consumption thing to
talk about.
All right,
what are your settings?
My settings have changed in the last 6 months.
Are you wearing an Apple Watch?
I'm not. I'm not there yet, although I hear really good things about the 4. I got the first one. It was just terribly slow and hard to read. But I've recently gone to – the only thing I'm notified on is Slack at messages right now and a couple of other Slack-related sort of notifications. Twitter used to be if you DM'd me, I'd get something or I get at mentioned. That's off. And also likes inside of Instagram. My wife and I compete professionally on Instagram. Not really, but it used to be this sort of like that sort of drip of like validation. And those are all gone. And that's one of the biggest time savers I've discovered in the last 6 months or so. Because each of those is a context switch. We'll talk about flow at a later date. But
do you recall an iOS bug that happened a while ago where your device could lock up and have a death cycle of rebooting if notifications came on?
I read about that. I never experienced that.
I didn't experience either, but I heard about it prior to it happening to many people. And so I turned off all my notifications just to be protective.
Yep.
And that was fantastically beneficial in my life.
I would love to know how much of my life I got back. And by the way, we're not talking about days or anything like that.
No.
It's just a second here and there of like, oh, what happened? Since you and I have been sitting here, I've got a couple Slack notifications, which I looked at. I just turned the phone over. But those are the only ones I get right now. And there was a couple of weeks where I was like, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter, especially with this sort of completionist thing that I keep on preaching.
If your family texts you.
Oh, yeah.
Those go through, obviously. Yeah. Your calendar tells you 10 minutes before you have to do a meeting. That kind of stuff.
All
right?
Of that sort of stuff.
But any kind of social feed stuff's all restricted to just work related.
It's all gone, which is delightful.
Do you have Slack? I'm assuming you're in a few Slack groups.
I am.
You got work ones, probably multiple work rooms, and then also other things.
Yep.
Like your RANs one that's public, pseudo public.
Yep.
Are those also on?
Yeah, but a lot of the conventions that we were talking about earlier in terms of how I get notified inside of Slack, I'm not really using it as much. So I get a lot less of that signal. Also, I'm the VP of engineering Slack, so I'm getting a lot there. And on the other ones, less people and less people actually talking straight at me because I'm not the VP of engineering there. I'm just the guy who set up the Slack.
Yeah. Okay. So notifications, highly minimal.
Highly minimal.
What about weather?
Weather?
Yeah, do you get notified by weather?
Yeah, I get dark sky.
Okay,
But I think we talked about this a long time ago. Yeah. But like, I also I love weather apps. I'm always searching. We've talked about this before. I'm always searching for the next weather app. I just paid $10 for this radar app, like $10 for an app. But someone like got very foamy at the mouth saying like, this is the one. And I'm like, I'm in. So
was it true?
I don't know yet because we're here in California at the time of year. We don't have the weather yet. Maybe never again. Who knows? But it's when it gets rainy that you can start to really kind of do the testing. Like,
do you have time for a ride or not?
Do I have time for a ride? No. That's definitely true. But also just like I am endlessly fascinated by how you predict the weather for the day. And Wonderground is the app that I'm using a ton. It's got this beautiful graph that tells me about sort of the shape of the precipitation over the course of the day. And I don't know why, but I like when there's rain, I love to look at that and then compare at the end of the day in my head, like, how much did they lie to me? And the reason I talk about these folks is because that's the best one. I think that's probably syndicated all over the place and lots of people use that data. But that's just fascinating to me as a thing to consume is sort of the weather of the day. And rain is, again, you and I both live here in the Santa Cruz, nearby the Santa Cruz Mountains. The rain in the mountains is like, I don't know about you, but like my first three rainstorms, it's just magical to me. And I don't know if people in the city actually get this, but like going to a forest in the middle of a rainstorm, that's...
Do you have a covered area in your house? You can be outside in the rain, not get wet.
We do, but I have a hat.
And that works too.
And I love to go. Like my favorite thing to do during a really major rainstorm is to bring a shovel, big shovel, and go walk around the mountain and just tinker with all the streams and everything that are going around. It's totally this weird engineering thing. But I did as a kid with my father and I do it now. And it's just... build a dam and sometimes it's just like, oh, make sure this doesn't overflow and like take out the road and whatnot.
It's actually something you have to do when you've got dirt roads around you and stuff.
I would do it without the shovel. Yeah.
Okay. But the other one, since we're also in Santa Cruz Mountains, you can go down to the coast as well and see the storm come in.
Oh yeah.
That's also amazing.
Yeah. No, those going down there, I just was down there last week for an offsite and I took my team. We took a bike ride out to the coast first thing in the morning and I gave them sort of the surfing tour of every place I've surfed in Santa Cruz and also told them like, hey, when the storm's big, this is the place to come because you will see waves that will blow your mind in terms of just like sheer amount of energy. We're really lucky here on the coast.
Definitely. All right. So notifications are family members actually trying to contact you via text probably and Slack stuff.
Yep.
Maybe some weather notifications and of course your calendars. And Like it's nice and minimal.
There's one other thing, which is phone. Like, will you answer the phone or not? In this current age of us getting spoofed on all the calls that we're getting, I don't ever answer my phone ever if I don't know who it is, which is new in the last year or so with all of this spoofing that's going on.
Museums, art, photography. Do you do any of that kind of thing?
I mean, Instagram, I guess, is a little bit of that. So I'm avidly looking at that as one of the things to kind of see. That's more like journaling of my friends and seeing what's going on there. Museums, I have a SF MoMA pass, which I go a couple of times a year, but that's not a common consumption path for me. If my wife is anywhere nearby, there's lots of museums because she's a better human than I am. But it's not like I was just in New York and saw friends.
By yourself?
By myself for work. Saw friends. Great food. Didn't go to the museums. And when I say that, my wife's like, what?
What did you work for that museum?
What are you doing there? Yeah. I'm like, I was working, honey.
I am lucky enough to have a partner also that will take me to museums. And every time I do it, I love it.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just a wonderful experience.
But it's not my first.
I don't go out and do it.
Yeah. No, I did it once and it was really good. But I mostly was trolling my wife by sending her pictures of beautiful art, going like, I'm here. I'm like,
that's
look at
just me.
next time, come with me. No, it was that. And also just like, hey, I did this and I love you, but next time I didn't go at all.
If you were a better human being, what stuff would you be consuming that you're not consuming?
The primary thing is just more reading. I just think it's the reason I write. It's one of the reasons I write. That craft of writing to me is so important from like explaining how you feel about a thing and doing it well. And I think the flip side of that is reading someone else who's taken the time to do that. And I still read, I don't read on my iPad at all. I still read physical books. There's something calming and zen and awesome about that. So I think the thing I would, if I had suddenly many more hours a week, it would be focused on reading. I used to be really into Stephen King years and years ago, and I hate horror movies, so why would I be good at books? It was sort of addressing the fear, and the books, you can always, like, step. It's less, like, in your face, But I just remember so many nights when I was a kid, like reading until like literally your eyes hurt, like 3 a.m. because it was just so interesting to consume information and understand a story and whatnot. And there's something that I think your brain likes to do that. And that's so much better than Reddit or the tweets or the blah, blah, blahs.
There's much more depth there.
It's more depth, and it teaches, I think it helps you think about how to think, I think. Same with writing.
Do you think you enjoy reading because you write?
I've read a lot as a kid, a lot, like a ton. This is obviously pre-internet. So I think that's one of the things I like about writing is it's sort of like doing this thing that I've always just loved to do. Words have always been important to me. But I've been writing since I was 11. So my gut is probably, but I probably need more therapy to figure that all out. But probably. I know that I like when I read really, really good writing, I'm like, ugh. Damn it. That's so good. That turn of phrase. And I think good writing is probably similar to a lot of professions, which is like you need like 3 or 4 good things, small good things to occur to be like legendary. By the way, I don't say that like it's easy at all, but like sometimes it's just you see this person do this one thing, you're like, that is the sentence I wanted to write my entire life. So there's something cool and awesome there about writing that I love.
You listen to podcasts. Mm-hmm. When do you do that and how much do you do it?
Not a ton of podcasts, believe it or not. There's like 3 or 4 and it'll be a little bit in the car. And
biking or do you music?
Not biking. Biking is purely music. We haven't talked about music. I'm always consuming music. It's like I can write and listen. Well, it depends on the type of writing I'm doing, but music is always, if I'm not having to listen to people, I will be listening to music all the time. I'm always looking for new music. So that's there. But podcast, I have so many friends that are so deeply into it, including you. I'm not listening to that many because I think it's the short attention span thing, which means like however long this episode is, it's going to be like
too long for you.
Probably too long for me. I'm like, what are the liner notes and what are the 3 things that you're going to put that I'm going to write in like the header of like Lop Talks about this with Lyle and blah, blah, blah. I'm like, okay, got it. Move on.
Yeah.
Jay.
Yeah. Have you listened to Song Exploder podcast?
No, I haven't.
Oh, okay. Well, that's my gift to you.
Okay.
Because you like music.
Thank you.
Song Exploder is take a song and break it down to how it was created, the story of making it with the tracks being laid out, and you just walk through it. And it's not a specific genre or anything, just all over the place.
That's good.
Fantastic.
Okay.
Especially for a person that likes music. And the thing that's wonderful about it is you never heard that song, maybe.
Right.
But after that, anytime you hear it, you're like, I know why that happened.
I have 2 responses to that that are only somewhat related. Number one is I just watched this thing on Hysteria, Def Leppard Hysteria, which is 30 years old now. It was all the band going through how they recorded that, which was fascinating. I am a massive Hysteria fan, Def Leppard fan. The other thing, it was the West Wing Weekly. Did you listen to this?
No.
Oh, it's the guy who's, I've forgotten who it was. Anyway, they take each episode.
And break it up.
And they break it up. Mm, and it's the guy from Will Bailey. From like season 5 or 6, or whatever, he's one of the folks on, and I only got through like.
And
the
I'm assuming
first
the directors
season.
Or something on there, or the writers, or
no, it's some other random guy who's good at podcast talking, like yourself, this other guy who they talk through it and kind of go through it, and I haven't gotten this far, but they had some of the cast members on it as well. But I loved West Wing deeply. It was our immunity system to Bush at the time, so it was just fascinating to hear them walk through each one because I have seen it's one of those like How I Met Your Mother. I've watched. All the way through like 7 times, like really. I think I same thing with West Wing, like all the way through like 5 or 6 times. Cause it's just, I'm a massive Sorkin fan and the way that he writes dialogue, I think is just amazing.
Why don't you like horror movies?
They're scary, I guess.
Was there a time in your life you did like them?
No, never liked them. I like the books just fine. It's the fear thing. It's like, it's annoying, by the way. I knew, my low point was, or I don't know, or maybe this is when my formative point was. Remember Poltergeist?
Sure.
Yeah. I saw that in the movie theaters. And my parents had no, like, filter. They'd let me see anything. So we're going to a movie tonight. I'm like, ooh, what? Poltergeist. I'm like, I didn't even know what a poltergeist was. I'm like, is it German? Like, I have no idea. So it was, I'm like, I get in there and I quickly realize that I've been duped by my parents who just like, it'll grow. You'll be fine. It'll be a learning experience. I literally walked out of the theater. This is in Scotts Valley nearby here. I walked out of the theater. For some reason, I don't understand why. There was a pillow in the car. So I walked out of the theater. This is like me, like I like to follow the rules. So how do you leave the theater without a ticket? Blah, blah, blah. I walked out of the theater. This is when the guy was like ripping his face opener or something like that. Got the pillow out of the car, came back in the theater. We were in the fourth, fifth row. And like, so I could hide behind the pillar. I got this round of applause and laughter as I was walking forward because everyone was like, oh yeah, let's
so you
a
went back in though.
I went back in, and but to hide behind the pillow. Yeah, that's a terrifying movie. I don't like horror movies. It's just, it's a little too much for me.
I don't know if I ever really thought about horror movies until I had children. And then after that, I just was not interested in them anymore. And I think it had to do with the world being scary. It was already scary enough. You know, I have to take care of this being. And so I kind of shifted. But I find myself frustrated with that because I haven't watched Get Out. And everyone says it's amazing and you should watch it. And I just haven't been able to bring myself
It's for that exact reason. I haven't watched it either. There was another one, the Cabin in the Woods. It was
I heard that was good too.
But I haven't watched it at all because it's like, you know, it was a response to these horrible Saw movies and all of this people being tortured horribly. Like,
which are not horror movies. Those are just gore movies.
It's just gore and whatever. Yeah. But like, what's his name? Joss Whedon.
Oh, Joss Whedon did.
And he was saying like, hey, I always wanted to do sort of a honest horror movie.
I do like Joss Whedon. Yeah.
But I, even with all of that, I still haven't watched it because I don't need to do that to myself.
Well, I think it's one of the things that we have to figure out. Consumption. It's the same thing as those news stories. There's always more stories. And if you're not going to enjoy something, do not watch it.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
You know, people talk to me about Netflix all the time, and I'm very clear that if you're not enjoying something, watch something else because there's no reason to push yourself through. And also, the algorithms actually know that you didn't watch it, and therefore you won't watch things like that. You won't be presented to things like that. Yep. So it's important to,
that's cool,
to only engage in the things you enjoy.
Well, my version of that is life is short, and like making every minute count is, again, this should just could be my short attention span. That's like, I want every minute to be valuable. I have wasted so much of my time.
What about the inversion? Not consuming, like meditation. Ever meditated?
I as you probably picked up on during this episode, I like to consume things quickly. So, and that applies over to work. I walk into a meeting and I paid well to like figure out situationally what's going on in this meeting. Who's there? Why do they matter? How do we make this useful for everyone? So I do that immensely, very quickly. So that's exhausting, as we've already discussed.
Yes.
I've recently, in the last 2 years, taken up biking. And biking is, A, going to extend my life as long as I don't get hit by a car. But it is exactly what you just described in that meditation piece, because the bike ride is anywhere from an hour to 4 hours. It's in the mountains. I can bike in any direction. It's not a mountain bike ride, which is a whole technical thing. It's more of a gravel bike ride, and we have a lot of roads up there that that's not many cars on it. And as I tell everyone who asks me about biking, which is a whole other thing that we can talk about at a later date, it is the most valuable time of my week. I do most of my extreme work, deep thinking work. And by the way, I don't get on the bike going like, okay, figure out X and figure out Y. It's just my brain doing that wandering around, and it's music playing, and it's physical exercise, and it's just this brainstorming / meditation. Mm-hmm. I have to keep a list, and I have a whole protocol for trying to remember how to, ooh, good idea, call that X, right? So by the end of the trip, I've got X, Y, Z, da, 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 that sort of thing. But it's, to me, it's that meditation piece of just letting your brain kind of work on the things it needs to work on, which
maybe without distracting it.
Without distracting it, and without, also, I think the physical exercise for me is keeping the bloods going and the brain is happy and all the things are going on. What I found specifically around meditation is, what is that, Headspace? Mm-hmm. Is that one? If I need to do that, I have a, like, if I need to meditate, and I have many times in my life, it's almost always a sign of an upstream bug that I need to go fix. Like something else is going on, stress at work or stress in the family or something like that.
Something you're putting off and not focusing on at the keep up, and then it'll merge.
I need to go fix that. And meditation can help there. It can like give you that sort of zen and sort of calm down and whatnot, but it's not actually solving the problem. Something else needs to be solved. And that's why it's always a bug report when I'm like, I should meditate. Why should I meditate? And it's not that there's anything bad with it. It's just, I think this biking thing, this other thing, is the kind of meditation that I like, where I'm working on something. And by the way, I could go an hour and do nothing at all except think about redwood trees. But very often it's like, it's this delightful, you know, those shower thoughts you have. You're like, oh, that's what it is, right? Imagine that for 3 hours. of just sort of like, whoa, this is cool. And what are you going to do? And some of those ideas are garbage, but there's just something lovely about that. And to me, that's the meditation that I need. Equivalent of a footnote for a podcast. I'm deeply on a David Foster Wallace kick right now. Is that his name? I always forget it. I've been trying to like finish Infinite Jest for a decade. I don't know. And I like get in like 80 chapters and I'm just like, oh, I can't do it.
And then you put it down for a while?
And I put it down for a while and then it moves over to the other pile and then that pile gets repiled into the garage and then I'm like, then I get all pissed off that I didn't do it. So it makes it back in, but I haven't done it. So I found Divide and Conquer. I got the Consider the Lobster. It's a short story, set of short stories. And it starts with the this short story of him covering for some magazine or newspaper or something, the adult video awards in Vegas that happened, used to happen, or I don't know, I've never been, after Comdex. And it's hilarious.
It's like, him covering it as a journalist?
As a journalist. And it's just so, it's so approachable. It's this awful, horrific topic, and he's just covering it like, I don't know, like just like it's any other thing. But it's hilarious, and he has such a aptitude with words and metaphors and just the whole damn thing. But his footnote thing is like, it's amazing.
It's excessive?
Yeah. Like there's one that's like 3 pages long, you know, a footnote in a book.
And I'm is
like,
it in line in the book?
Yeah.
Like so I have a friend who I'm reading his book. It's about to come out on MIT Press about art and technology and computer science. And it's Warren Sachs' book. And he had footnotes in line, and I was...
Wait, in line is like...
Like on the bottom of the page.
Oh,
like,
yeah,
no, on the bottom of the page,
yeah,
right? Yeah. I mean, in the sense that... there's the notation that's just right on the word,
right, right.
And then below is a paragraph of text. And I was reading it in two forms. I was reading it by listening to some text to speech, right. And then I was also reading it. So I was kind of like doing it twice. It's pretty dense material. But the text-to-speech system was reading the footnote at the bottom of the page. It was just driving me crazy.
Yeah, it's interesting, the footnote thing, because I've never been exposed to such significant amount of footnotes. You have to like – it's like a there's a compilation thing that's going on there because you're in the middle of the thing and you're like, oh, you're 26. So you go down to the bottom and sometimes he's got like 3 words and sometimes he's got like 3 pages, but
like a micro story inside
yeah,
there.
No, it's really, and I heard that Infinite Jest is even more interesting, but you got to like stop and you're like, oh, okay, I got to go read this now. But I'm like, why is he putting it as a footnote? Like, what's the process there? And the process that the story that I'm telling myself is he's like, this is important, but it's not important enough, which should mean that you don't have to read the footnote.
Yes.
But I'm compulsive. So yeah. I have to read it. So now I'm like, when I see the number, I'm like, stop, go down. And by the way, it's a little, I'm like losing my vision because I'm getting older, but it's like a little tiny font. Like I'm like reading it and yeah. Doing it. And, but when it's really long, I'm like, why am I on page 3 of this footnote when I could just be ready? Like, is it, why is there so much when it's supposed to be something that's optional? I don't know if that's the point of footnotes.
Well, so
but that's
what Warren did on his second rev of it is he threw them in the very back of the book.
Mm-hmm.
So they're still there. They're still referenceable. But because you have to turn to the back of the book, you're not going to read them in line.
Right.
And it's much more readable. I mean, I enjoy it more.
But in this case, again, I'm a footnote noob. The context of that sentence, it does matter
yes.
that you read it at that time, even though it's optional. It's very strange.
You should make a rule about it where if you didn't understand something about it, then you read the footnote.
Yeah, it's not that.
It's not like that.
It's like, would you like to know more? Right?
That's well, so, but isn't that the responsibility of the writer to decide whether it goes in or not? This doesn't feel like a cheat to go, it's not important enough, but it is important
kind
enough.
It does, but I've been reading it. So if you go read the most recent entry that I put on RANs, I was just thinking about org charts. And I'm this colossal jerk, not jerk, I'm this... I usually write a beginning sometimes that I just fall in love with and I can't throw away. And sometimes the beginning is purely the warm up for the actual beginning. So I wrote this beginning. I'm like, this is not about this anymore. It's not important. But it was like 3 paragraphs that were pretty good. So,
so you had to have it in there?
So I moved it down into the middle and literally it's this ginormous footnote on the blog. And it's a total David Foster.
Did you move it as a footnote?
Yeah, the whole thing.
Did you have to add footnote support into the blog? You already have that.
No, WordPress has it now. So it's pretty good. Or I have a plugin or something like that. But the funny thing was, I read about this and people gave me feedback. This person said, the footnote was the best part of this piece. I'm like, oops, wrote the wrong article. Are we doing the important thing on footnotes? That's what it feels like.
I think we just did.